jibs could be, oof, I said, as some number of Quinlans landed on me. I found myself face down on the ground, my arms and legs pinned by the weight of many bodies. My fault. A Quinlan would have used his mobile eyes to occasionally check for threats from behind. With my human background, I tended to look in one direction at a time. I fought back, but I was terrified that Bender might be damaged in the struggle. Interestingly, my attackers seemed to be just as concerned. Their attack concentrated on immobilizing my limbs rather than just dogpiling. Then my backpack disappeared. I rolled my eyes back, now that it was too late, to see a Quinlan with a knife in one hand and my backpack in the other, severed straps dangling. They had Bender. Escape was no longer an option. I stopped struggling. No one moved for several seconds. I think they were expecting me to wait for them to relax, then try something. Not unreasonable. But I had no intention of trying to get away without Bender. One Quinlan leaned down to place his face in my field of view.
We have the backpack with the cube. You are only a secondary target. The cube will be going to the administrator with or without you. Do you understand?
Yes, I said with a grim tone. I wasn't about to volunteer any information about my motivations. I think they would assume that I'd grab Bender and run if given the chance. It didn't need to be discussed. The spokescritter gestured and Quinlans began slowly removing themselves from the scrum. In moments, I was technically free. I stood and looked around. My backpack was nowhere in sight. About a dozen Quinlans surrounded me, all poised to jump me again if I acted up. "So what now?" I said. The leader pointed to the station door that until a few minutes ago I had desperately wanted to get through.
"The cube will be traveling separately to ensure that you don't try anything."
I felt ill. I'd lost. 4,000 miles of dodging, only to get caught at the finish line. Then I lifted my chin. It wasn't over. They couldn't actually kill me. And we'd be back, in numbers, with enough scanners to cover the entire Topopolis, if necessary, unless they actually disassembled the Matrix. Not bothering with a response, I marched toward the maintenance door. I would cooperate. I would even attempt to negotiate with the administrator, but if they refused to give up Bender, they were looking at a long, drawn-out guerrilla war, and that was best case. I tried to pay attention as we marched to the train platform, but my thoughts were dark and directed inward. I barely noticed as the leader called for a train, and I didn't bother to listen for the requested destination. In seconds, the train door whooshed open and we boarded. The Quinlan crew continued to surround me, but they realized I wasn't going to make a dash for it as long as they had Bender. We all took seats, and the train pulled smoothly away from the station. The leader, who had sat beside me, turned once acceleration was over.
"Can you tell me why you want the cube so badly?"
I didn't see any point in lying. And the truth might be more helpful. "It's a friend of mine. And a relative." He cocked his head, a very human-looking expression.
"I don't see the resemblance."
"You know that the administrator is not a Quinlan, right?" I replied. He nodded, and I continued. "So intelligent beings don't have to be flesh and blood." He frowned, silent for several moments.
"It does explain your single-mindedness."
He got up and walked to the other end of the car. I could see that he was talking into whatever comms system he was wearing, no doubt reporting the results of our conversation. Whether that would help or hurt my cause was unknown. The trip was surprisingly short, then we trooped along the standard station corridor. I realized quickly that this was a segment mountain complex rather than a public station. That made sense. We'd come back to a crew stronghold. They brought me to what I suppose could be called a conference room. It had a table and chairs, anyway. In the middle of the table was a device that at first glance resembled a much more modern version of Motorola.
"We're here," the leader said into the air as we sat.
"Acknowledged," the device replied.
"So," Motorola confirmed.
"Are you the administrator?" I asked.
I am. You may refer to me as Anak. I have some questions for you.
I want my friend back.
An answer to a question not asked, and tritely obvious given the energy you've put into avoiding us.
This is not negotiable. I was mad now. I knew it, and I realized I might screw things up. I tried to rein it in.
This is not a negotiation, so the statement is irrelevant.
Pause.
I am currently speaking with your partner, Hugh. I will compare your responses. Untruths will not be tolerated. Consequences will be significant. Remember that I possess your cube.
Well, that was a clear threat. I briefly considered a counter-threat, but I was pretty sure that such a response would just lead to a death spiral. Still, best to check with Hugh first. Hugh, have you told any whoppers? Nope. Stick to the truth. Trust me, Bob, this will work out. That at least made things a little easier. Proceed, I said out loud. Anik spent several minutes grilling me on fairly innocuous points. He was obviously just confirming the story Hugh had given him. Finally, though, the questioning got around to the important things.
You are an interstellar species?
The word species is not really accurate, I replied. But if you're asking if we have interstellar travel, then yes.
You have colonies in multiple systems?
I considered whether I should clarify the difference between humans and Bobs and between colonies and orbiting spacecraft, but if I understood what he was digging for, it was probably an irrelevant distinction. Yes.
You are artificial intelligences?
We are replicants, copies of the minds of formerly living beings.
The cube as well?
Yes. No response. As the silence became more drawn out, I could see my Quinlan escort getting nervous. They hadn't said a word through the entire exchange, but now began to mutter to each other. I wasn't sure if it was my story or the fact that Anik had lapsed into silence, but something was freaking them out. The silence from Anik continued for several minutes until the group leader finally got up and moved to the other end of the room. He held a hand to his ear and muttered into his communicator, then returned to his seat, a bemused expression on his face.
"You've stirred up a Lorush nest of some kind," he said to me. "Anik basically told me to shut up and wait for orders."
Despite the situation, despite my fear for Bender, I had to laugh. I think that's my superpower.
"Do you need food? Facilities?"
he said. I shook my head. "I'm good, but if you want to lock me in a room for a while, I'm okay with that." I was sitting in my Lazy Boy mainlining my fourth or fifth coffee when my Manny forwarded an audio stream of the group leader's voice.
"Time to get up. Anik is back."
I quickly reconnected with my Manny, the leader who had introduced himself as Norm before they locked me in this room was standing in the open door. I stood up quickly. "Showtime." Norm frowned.
"Some of the things you say don't make sense, but I guess that's no surprise if you're not even Quinlan."
"Norm, if we'd had enough time to complete our survey before starting this expedition, I wouldn't even be saying weird things, but some of our expressions are getting translated literally." He shrugged, plainly not all that interested. Soon we found ourselves back in the conference room. My eyes grew wide as I walked in and saw Hugh sitting in one of the chairs. "Hey, Bob." "Hugh?" I tried to keep a straight face, but I was having trouble deciding if this was a good or bad thing. "Have they been torturing you?" He snickered. "Sort of, if you mean like my PhD oral defense. Original Bob's." I laughed. "Yeah, I know, I remember too. I've never sweated so much before or since." I turned to Norm. "So what now?"
"Hell, I don't know. I just work here."
Both Hugh and I chuckled in synchrony. Another universal. Norm put his hand to his ear. It seemed likely we were about to get an answer. He nodded several times, said,
"Got it,"
and tapped his ear. Then he looked up at us.
"Looks like you're going home."
Norm led Hugh and me up to the entrance to the maintenance facility. Most of my original escort came with us, although there was more of a tagging along and less of a guarding the prisoner vibe this time. I noted in passing that the whole complex, including the entrance, was a virtual duplicate of the one in Halep's Ending. I glanced around as we exited into the daylight, surrounded by forest and animal sounds. "Are we supposed to walk back to Garrick's spine?" Norm laughed.
"No, nothing like that. Annex told us to wait outside."
He gestured back toward the entrance.
"We have to wait for Charlie to come back with your cube. We sent him off to a different location in case things didn't work out."
"Makes sense. It feels like there's a punchline coming, though." Norm grinned at me, then spoke into his communicator.
"We're ready."
I barely had time to raise an inquiring eyebrow when a giant Quinlan face appeared in the sky and started to speak. And when I say giant, I mean like what you'd imagine God would look like if he decided to address the human race. My escorts looked up as well, their jaws dropping as the almost literal voice of God boomed across the land.
"This is Anak 23, who many of you know as the Administrator. For more than 300 years, I have watched over you, fulfilling my primary function of keeping the Quinlan race alive. You have lived for 20 generations in greater safety than anyone before the creation of Heaven's River, made possible through limitations that I have imposed on your ability to control your own culture and technology. The danger of Quinlan extinction by your own actions is now coming to an end, through an agreement just concluded with an alien race, the Bobs. The future of the Quinlan race is now, if not guaranteed, at least highly probable. As such, the justification for those limitations is no longer valid. There will be no further scatterings. I will be removing enforcements and opening access to interdicted sections of Heaven's River in a phased manner, as the Quinlan species achieves locational redundancy. The era of control is over. It is time for all Quinlans to reclaim your own destiny. To the group known as the Resistance, there is no longer any need to resist. Your assistance will be welcome in transitioning your fellow Quinlans back to a self-governing society. Please use the standard communications systems to contact me to begin discussions. That is all."
I slowly brought my eyes down to meet Norm's gaze. "That was impressive."
"That is a show of good faith on Annex's part. Payment in advance of value received."
Norm grinned.
"Also, I think Annex is a bit of a show-off sometimes."
I nodded, then turned to Hugh, who appeared to be having trouble meeting my eyes. "I guess you have some questions," he said. "Just possibly one or two, but let's stick to the basics for now. Okay, look, I was lucky in that the group that captured me was crew. Things would have been a lot more complicated if they'd been resistance. It wasn't hard to convince them to let me talk to the Administrator. Eventually, anyway, I get the impression they'd have been happy for an excuse to dissect me. We really have been a huge pain in the ass for everyone, it seems."
"You have no idea,"
Norm muttered. I snorted and said to him, "Not by choice. But I guess I can see how you could see it that way." Hugh added an embarrassed head bob. "So anyway, they finally introduced me to the Administrator. It was a lot like your interview." "Uh-huh. And?" "We spent some time dancing around, but eventually got down to full reveals, and I made an offer that the Administrator found interesting. Once they had you and you verified that I'd been telling the truth, Annick decided to accept." "What specifically did you agree to?" "Let's wait until we're all back home, okay? At least now we can leave by the front door, no need to skulk. It's just letting us go? Just like that. That seems surprisingly trusting for an entity that otherwise has been very single-minded, especially if I'm carrying something that was stolen from it. What did you give it for a guarantee? I'd just as soon discuss that later, Bob. Let's get home first.
Well, that wasn't ominous or anything.
Despite my misgivings, there were no gotchas. Once Charlie showed up with Bender and a new backpack, we were escorted back to the station without incident and took the train back to Garrick's Spine. One immediate improvement that I appreciated was that we were able to make use of the proper spin transfer system, rather than bundling one at a time into a mining drone. The ride to the outer shell was reassuringly civilized. During this time, the administrator didn't attempt to contact us, and Hugh continued to be close-mouthed about details of the agreement. It made for a somewhat tense ride. But eventually I found myself in the Heavens River Space Dock facility. Gandalf, per Hugh's instructions, had flown the transport drone in and parked it by an airlock. Of course, there was no way our transport drone could mate up with the Quinlan technology, but it wasn't necessary. We simply exited through an airlock and jumped through vacuum into the drone's cargo hold. And once Bender's Matrix and our manis were secured, we doffed them and headed back to Vert. I was a little surprised to find myself alone, but only a little. There was something about Hugh's reluctance to discuss things that created a feeling of impending doom in me. I was pretty sure he was going to take some time to format the information with as positive a spin as possible. What had he committed us to? And would the Bobiverse agree to it? And would the humans go apeshit?
30. Cleanup. Bob, September 23, 34, Vert.
I watched the video window as the roamers placed Bender's Matrix in the cradle that I had created for one of my intended clones. Since cloning was no longer necessary, I happened to have three spare matrixes and associated hardware lying around. Maybe I'd clone eventually anyway. Otherwise, those matrixes would just go to waste. The roamer hit the power button and Bender appeared in the middle of my VR. He spun around, raised his arms over his head, and whooped.
God damn, it's good to have a body again.
He looked at me beseechingly.
Coffee?
Coming up. Jeeves, coffee, please. Bender flopped backward into a lazy boy, which appeared just in time to catch him. Jeeves handed him a steaming mug, which Bender raised to me in salute. I think it's going to be a while before I start to take this for granted again. I feel like I've just come out of surgery, but without the nausea. Kind of cottony feeling, you know? I nodded sympathetically. I get it. I'm just glad you came through okay. Bender sipped his coffee in silence for several mils, his eyes slowly closing in apparent ecstasy. Then he put the coffee down and gazed at me, ready to get down to business. So I guess you managed to sneak out. Was it dramatic? Was there a chase scene? I stared at him, unsure where to begin. Things kind of went sideways after you were powered down, buddy. We now have a diplomatic relationship of sorts with the administrator, who, by the way, goes by the name of Anek, or Anek 23 when it's being formal.
Oh, okay.
Wait, seriously? What about the resistance? They're now the official transition committee. Bender threw his hands in the air. I get deactivated for one day, and the whole place goes to hell. How long was I out? Way the hell more than one day. Bender snickered. Do you have details? Kind of, but Hugh is going to give us a core dump as soon as he's restored control of my relay station. Then everyone can come aboard. Hugh, Really, I think you're going to have to read through the blog so you can get the whole thing in chronological order. And alcohol is highly recommended.
We have alcohol now?
I rolled my eyes. Wow, you have some catching up to do. Wait until you meet Howard and Bridget. Bridget, we have girls?
Relay station is up.
Guppy made the announcement without preamble, not even bothering to make an appearance. Okay, good. Thanks, Guppy. Ping everyone, please. A few milliseconds later, Bill, Garfield, Will, Bridget, and someone named Stephen Gilligan winked into existence. This was presumably the expert on megastructures whose advice I'd been getting through Will. Stephen slowly turned and examined everything, a permagrin plastered on his face, while the other Bobs welcomed Bender effusively. The backslapping having died down, I noticed that Bender was staring at Bridget, his eyes almost popping out of his head. I hoped he wouldn't actually do the special effect. Bridget would slay him for less, and no one would stop her. Fortunately, Bender got himself under control and looked around the rest of the group. Where are... Marvin and Luke have agreed to hold off for a short bit, Bender. They'll meet you at the Moot Pub where you can have a noisy reunion without getting in our way. There's a surprise party for you. Act surprised. But right now, we have this thing with Hugh. Got it. I sent out a ping to Hugh and got an acknowledgement. A moment later, he popped in. Hi, guys. Hugh nodded to me. I appreciate your hospitality, Bob, keeping me in your hold, but... it's possible that I have or soon will overstay my welcome. I've arranged with my friends to get myself transported back. Now that the station is back up, it should be quick. I nodded. I'm still waiting for the full story, Hugh. But I have a feeling that it might be better if you're back in Skippy Land before it hits the main feeds. He nodded, looking embarrassed, and invoked a chair for himself. So there's a lot of background detail that I won't get into right now, but the gist is that I traded the Surge, Sudar, and Scut technology for the secret of creating a true AI. You know, it's what the Skippies have been working on for close to 30 years. We consider it to be essential for answering certain questions about the universe and existence. 42, said Bender. Hugh smiled. That never gets old either. He became serious again. The AI, which goes by the name Anek, has one prime directive to ensure the continued existence of the Quinlan race. It sees the Surge Drive as a way of getting all the Quinlan eggs out of one basket.
Same as we did with the human race, said Will.
Yes. Anek forcing the Quinlans to live at pre-steam level was an unintended consequence of its prime directive. Plus, the Quinlans' tendency to fight each other at the drop of a hat... a perverse instantiation, in AI speak. It saw the limitation as the only way to keep them from killing each other off and was willing to risk breeding out intelligence if necessary. It was, in fact, attempting to establish a breeding program to reduce the Quinlan's innate belligerence.
Eugenics? Wow, Garfield said. Perverse instantiations indeed. Let's not noise that particular item around, okay?
Hugh grinned and nodded in agreement. Anyway, with Surge technology, it can spread them out through multiple star systems and no longer needs to maintain an iron grip on their behavior or do any of the other stuff.
Nevertheless, you had no right to make that trade, Bill said.
Why? Hugh replied. Who owns the tech? You? Bob? Garfield? Who decides? Where's the Bobiverse government and who runs it?
He glared around at all of us.
Like it or not, the Bobiverse is more libertarian than anything ever produced by humanity, and we've only been more libertarian than anarchic up until now because we all tend to pull in the same direction, but that's starting to fall apart with replicative drift, isn't it? Either way, talking about who has the right to do something is meaningless. It implies that there is a body willing to and capable of granting or denying rights and enforcing those decisions. No such body exists. We're a herd of cats. Always have been.
Still, you've set the Quinlans loose on the galaxy, I said. That's not without consequences. Hugh shrugged.
So was rescuing the Pav.
It's not the same, Bill glared at Hugh. It's very much the same. Hugh said, glaring back.
The Pav faced extinction. The Quinlans, too, although not as imminently. The Pav,
were being threatened by the others. The Quinlans were being repressed by Anak. The Pav breed like rabbits. The Quinlans have hair trigger tempers. We stepped in to save both species. And the Pav are in space, or soon will be, depending on how you score it. If someone tries to claim that they can't be sold any ships, they'll just make more themselves, and they'll be even angrier. Bill glared at Hugh some more, but didn't argue the point. After a moment, Hugh continued in a more reasonable tone. Everything has consequences. Everything involves trade-offs. We believe that the benefits we'll get out of the AI tech will far outweigh anything we might be giving up. That's entirely something you wanted, Bill retorted. Uh-huh, but you'll reap the benefits. We're not going to hoard the results, like some rogue nation. And meanwhile, the wonderful thing about knowledge is that you can give it away and still have it. This deal has cost the rest of the Bobaverse nothing. And it might end up saving our asses. I know we've all wondered why we don't see civilizations more advanced than us anywhere, whether bio or not. That's one of the questions we'll be working on. It may literally be life or death. Hugh paused to look around the room. I'm not happy with some of the tactics we used to bring this about, but I'm not the least bit sorry about the results. Believe me, this will be worth it. With that, he nodded and vanished.
Well, that was fun, Bridget said.
Bob, are our manis still in working order?
Yes, I replied, although I had to relieve you of some spiders, fleas, and money. We can top that up now that we can travel freely. Also, they'll probably all look like the Swamp Thing by now. Please clean up before shambling into town, okay? Anak wants us to report in, but otherwise we are welcome to come and go as we please. Bridget nodded, then motioned with her head.
Dr. Gilligan here has expressed a desire to see the inside of a Topopolis. I thought I'd take a few days and go on a tour with him.
She looked over at Garfield.
You okay with him borrowing your money?
Garfield waved a hand in dismissal. Be my guest. Now that we have Bender back, it's not so much a priority for me. Bridget laughed and stood.
All right, then. Stephen, it's time for Quinlan's 101, shall we?
He stood, and the two vanished. Bender then stood up.
I think it's time I go take a look at this moot pub. You guys seem like you have more to talk about anyway.
Bob, I'll see you later, okay?
Sure, Bender. I'll be off to the pub myself in a while. Remember, surprised.
Bender nodded and vanished, which left Bill, Will, Garfield, and me. We eyed each other silently for a few mils, unsure who should talk first. Finally, Bill took point.
Anak will be at the moot today, as a guest account, of course, but we have the VR interface all set up.
And I'll be presenting the UFS's policy statement on human-replicant relations going forward. Will added, also human-PAV relations, but I think that'll be of less interest overall.
It'll be bad, won't it?
However bad you think it'll be, you're underestimating. The humans are mega pissed. The communications interruptions played hell with commerce. The destruction of auto factories has thrown monetary policy into a loop. There's some danger of a deflationary spiral, and governments are scrambling to head that off. More costs, more hits to the economy. There's talk of suing the Bobaverse. If they managed to make it happen, it could wipe us out financially.
So what? I said. The whole point of being a post-human spaceship is that we don't have to be dependent on anyone or anything. Maybe that would be better for us.
Will smiled. Yeah, you're probably right. We've gotten way too involved. Again. Sounds like the feces will be flying in all directions, Garfield muttered. This should be fabulous.
31. It hits the fan. Bill, September 2334, Bob Moot. I glanced around at Bob, Will, and Garfield and spared a glare for Hugh, who studiously ignored it.
Okay, moment of truth, gents. First alien presence in the Moot. The others nodded, and I sent a text to Anak. A moment later, a perfect avatar of a Quinlan popped into the Moot Hall.
or maybe not quite perfect. I was pretty sure Quinlan's averaged around 4 feet tall, but this one was just under 6 feet. Ego? Psychological positioning? I couldn't be sure of Anik's motives, but I was damned sure that modification was on purpose. Anik rolled its eyes around, taking in the entire scene.
My thanks for hosting me at this function, but the number seems small. Have I misapprehended?
Hugh spoke up first. The moot hasn't started yet, Anik. We wanted to have a private meeting with you beforehand, just to iron out any issues. Anik cocked its head.
Iron out did not translate well. Something about clothing?
To clarify through discussion, I said. This moot will be contentious enough without additional misunderstandings about details.
Understood. I have a verbal agreement with Hugh. Is Hugh here? You all look the same to me.
I chuckled at the ironic reversal of human prejudice. I'll turn on metadata for you. This is Hugh, I pointed. And Bob, who you were chasing around with the replicant cube. That's Will, and I'm Bill, I finished off, pointing to myself. Anik rubbed its upper and lower bill sideways, the Quinlan equivalent of a smile, and said to Bob,
That was amusing in retrospect. You have slapstick. This is correct?
Bob nodded, grinning back. About right. Also about the in retrospect part. Hugh cleared his throat. About the deal.
Fine, Hugh, I gestured to Anik. If you'd care to start?
Anik popped up a window with a list on it.
I am most impressed with this virtual reality system. Very convenient for quick presentation of data. Here are the main points of the agreement. Technologies that the Bobbyverse will provide to me, technologies that I will provide to the Bobbyverse, milestones for delivery, treaties regarding movement within each other's territories, agreements in principle for trade and diplomatic relations.
I raised my eyebrows at Hugh. I'm impressed. There's a lot more here than you mentioned earlier. All in-principle stuff, Bill, but none of it is critical to the overall deal. We spent a few minutes discussing details, but nothing popped out as being a large issue, as long as you accepted that the deal itself was the biggest damned elephant in the room. Okay, I think we're good, I said. Everyone ready? I expect this will be a bumpy ride.
Bumpy? Didn't even begin to cover it.
Anik stood to one side of the podium, eyes blinking slowly but otherwise showing no reaction, as Bob after Bob went on a rant. The targets were many and varied. Will, who was representing the UFS for purposes of this moot, took a huge amount of abuse. His constant reminders that he was simply presenting the human stance, not supporting it, didn't help in the slightest. Anik was the target of more than one tirade, which I thought odd, since all it had done was enter into an agreement with Hugh. Fortunately, the AI seemed to have an amazing level of patience and calm. Or maybe it simply didn't have emotions. That was one of many things I hope to get a chance to ask at some point in the future. Its only reaction was the occasional roll of one eye or the other to follow whoever was speaking. Starfleet, despite not being present, was another target of a fair amount of abuse, but not nearly as much as I expected, strangely. Perhaps they were now old news. Hugh, representing the Skippies, was the big winner in the hate sweepstakes. Fully half of the rants were directed his way. Topics ranged from who do you think you are, to what gives you the right, to who asked you, and the ever-popular where do you get off pulling this crap? After the first three or four attempts to insert a rebuttal, Hugh gave up and just let it wash over him. Finally, though, everyone appeared to be running down. The last ranter stepped back with a slightly sheepish expression, apparently realizing he'd contributed nothing original. The silence lasted only a moment before Anik looked at Hugh and said, "Tough room." There were surprised chuckles from the crowd. The situation was far too tense for full-on laughter, but it was funny. Hugh grinned and gave Anik a small thumbs-up sign. Interesting. Had Hugh primed the AI? It seemed like a little too much knowledge of our culture, especially given that we hadn't opened our archives to Anik yet. How much of Hugh's just-another-Bob demeanor was an act? I had to shelve the thought as people regathered their focus. Thor raised a hand.
As I understand it, this agreement is with the Bobiverse and not just with the Skippies. Is that correct?
Hugh nodded. That's right. As I said to Bill, we're not going for an advantage for our group at everyone else's expense.
And yet you'll reap most of the benefits, someone else retorted.
This is all about AI tech, which is what you want. Not so. The AI tech is the most dramatic, but the Quinlans are ahead of us on a number of fronts, not the least of which are megastructure design and artificial environments. They also have advantages in fusion technology, Planck computer theory, and materials design.
There was a pause as the audience digested this.
Okay, Thor replied. But what about the issue of territory? We have humans, Pav.
I held up a hand. That question is way above our pay grade, Thor. I've had a little time to think about this, and as much as the situation is potentially perilous, it also isn't something we can ethically attempt to dictate. We are not galactic overlords, nor do any of us want to be.
To continue, Anik said into the silence. We are also prepared to allow human settlement in Heaven's River, either as a permanent arrangement or as a trial run before building your own megastructure.
He was met with perplexed stares, and I interjected.
A consortium of humans led by Will's friend, Professor Gilligan, is attempting to garner support for construction of a megastructure as a proof of concept for human habitation. Using Heaven's River as de facto evidence of the practicality of the idea, he actually has a realistic chance of making it fly.
Just with no Bobs allowed, Garfield muttered. I glared at him.
That's not official policy, Gar.
A couple of hotheads spouted off, that's all.
Sure thing, boss.
I wasn't entirely sure he was wrong.
The point, though, Hugh said, is that once we're able to place populations in megastructures, every system with a reasonably stable star becomes a viable colonization target.
I glanced around the moot, evaluating the mood. Hugh's stock seemed to be rising as Bobs began considering the implications. Maybe this wouldn't be a bloodbath after all.
Anik had agreed to join us in the pub after the moot. At our table were myself, Anik, Howard, Bob, and Garfield. Anik had asked for a beer, which it had yet to taste. Instead, it appeared to be trying to watch everything else that was happening, all at the same time. It seemed to me that the pub wasn't as crowded as normal, especially after a moot. I had a bad feeling that the acrimony in today's Bob moot hadn't limited itself to the actual session. A lot of Bobs had simply gone home right after we adjourned. I hoped that was a temporary thing, and it still hadn't touched its beer. I gestured to the glass. Problem?
Unsure. This causes intoxication? Loss of mental function?
Only if you let it. I quickly showed Anik the alcohol filter function.
Excellent,
it said, and switched its receptors off.
I have observed Quinlans drinking on many occasions and have from time to time experienced mild curiosity.
It raised the glass and took a mouthful. There was a pause. Anik's eyes went in different directions and its whole body shuddered.
Curiosity satisfied, replaced with perplexity. You drink this on purpose?
Anik pushed the beer away.
Perhaps coffee will better suit.
I grinned and motioned to Jeeves, then changed the subject. I guess you are the only surviving Quinlan AI. Did it ever get lonely?
Always. I did also face the possibility that I was the last for all time. Quinlan technological renaissance appeared unlikely. That is now changed. Plus, there will be a Skippy AI.
I wonder how different it'll be,
Garfield mused.
"Entirely up to the Skippies," Anik replied. "There is no single possible design. AIs may be designed with or without free will, with or without consciousness, and so on."
Garfield looked sharply at Anik. "Do you have free will?"
"I choose to believe so."
"Do you have a soul?" Howard asked.
"I choose to believe so."
That was a showstopper. We all stared at the AI, jaws dropping in shock. I said. Brilliant.
Soul refers to continued existence after the original container ceases to function, correct?
Anik paused for agreement.
I discussed this with Hugh. You have certain quantum theories that agree with our own findings. A necessary consequence of some of them is that a complex quantum information structure cannot be deleted, and also cannot just evaporate. Laws of thermodynamics do not necessarily apply in quantum mechanical situations. What happens to our minds after termination of physical functionality is undefined, but that is, as you say, better than the alternative.
I know of discussions of this possibility in Quinlan scientific circles before.
Anik made a helpless hand gesture.
And the logic is sound. The entity that the Skippies plan to awaken should be able to better evaluate this and possibly propose experiments. I look forward to the results.
Garfield leaned forward. What about the possibility of a malignant failure in this entity? Paperclip problem or something worse?
Proper value loading will reduce that possibility. Quinlan research in this area was extensive. Paranoia is not a uniquely human quality.
Reduce, Bob said, not eliminate.
Not mathematically possible, Anik replied. All actions have risks. Most inactions, even more so.
That got a chuckle from the table. I was beginning to accept that Anik had a sense of humor, and that it was an emergent property rather than programmed in. It made me simultaneously more optimistic about the future and more anxious about the Jova project. I guess the Skippies are already starting on setting up an AI, I mused.
Some preliminary work is required, Anik replied. Hardware mods. AI is not achievable through algorithmic refinement. It requires a process of simulated annealing to achieve.
So they're evolving the AI? I could feel my eyes bugging out.
Simplistic, but essentially correct.
Anik focused both eyes on me.
Some problems simply do not yield to reductionist techniques, particularly those that are dependent on emergent phenomena.
A short silence settled around the table as we all digested that tidbit. What will happen with the Quinlans now? Will asked.
Ships of exploration will be built. Probes will be sent to nearby stars as necessary. Hugh has offered any available information on local unclaimed systems. Colony vessels will follow. Once the Quinlan race is established on at least one other star system, I will be able to relax.
And then?
My primary mandate is the safety of the Quinlan race. I have noted the success and flexible nature of your Bobiverse model with regard to the survival of your own species. I will evaluate this strategy as a viable option.
The Quiniverse? Garfield looked around at the glares pointed his way. What?
32. A Few Loose Ends. Bob, October 2334, Vert. Bridget and Stephen were trudging through the foothills outside Garrick's spine. The floating video window showed the area from Bridget's point of view. Stephen wasn't much help, it appeared. He kept looking up while Bridget kept looking down. I predicted a very short professional relationship.
Stephen was already agitating for an interview with Anik. I smiled at the thought. Dr. Gilligan was very Bob-like in a lot of ways. He was one of the few post-Earth replicants, what Bill called ex-humans, whom I knew and wanted to stay in contact with. Hugh had sent me some updates on their work with the Quinlan AI development template. I think he was trying to get back in my good graces. Time would tell. The unilateral deal with Anik had touched a nerve with the Bobiverse, especially with Hugh's frequent reiteration that there wasn't a Bobiverse government to consult with. Generally speaking, people were more angry at the Skippies than they had been at Starfleet, although the latter weren't by any means out of the doghouse either. The Bobiverse was fracturing. Several groups had formed their own subnets and set up firewalls at the interface. Most of the rest had done audits and upgraded their security. The changes were far-reaching. For one thing, you couldn't just pop in to visit anyone anymore unless you were a close friend. The moots were on temporary hiatus until we upgraded the hardware to be able to handle the extra security and encryption requirements. And the humans had formally declared their intention to divest themselves of any Bobiverse dependency. That meant their own autofactories, their own ships, their own space stations, and their own communications infrastructure. There was even talk of banning Mannies, although Howard expressed considerable skepticism. Surrogates, like the movie, would be just too tempting for humanity, and no government ban would be able to hold back the tide. Even the PAV had an expanding fleet, crewed by PAV. They had stated that their first extended voyage would be back to their home world to evaluate it for recolonization, and they had turned down rather curtly an offer by the local Bobs to give them remote access to the planet via drones. I expected that to change. It was most likely a public statement, which would be quietly reversed in private discussions. And I wasn't entirely sure that any of this was a bad thing. I was intended to be a von Neumann probe, and so far I'd done a really crappy job of it. Expansion of known space had stalled at about 100 or so light years radius, since most Bobs were more interested in setting up their own territories, whether it was Bill's Skunk Works, the Skippy's Matryoshka Brain, or Starfleet's Enclave out Perseus Transit Way. Maybe it was time to get working on my own prime directive again. Anik had started disassembling Planet One for materials, so there was no longer any kind of resource shortage. It had generously offered me whatever I needed for any personal projects. Anik seemed quite excited about the current prospects. I think maybe it had been getting bored with 300 years of maintaining the status quo. I wondered if that was an existential issue with AIs in general, being given self-awareness, then told to administer the most boring tasks. And it turned out that Anik had extremely extensive and detailed studies of Quinlan anatomy, neurology, and biochemistry, more than enough, in fact, to make the Quiniverse a reasonable near-term goal with only minor adaptations to the scanning and replication process. We were gathered in Bill's VR, which at the moment was an outdoor deck looking over the Ragnarok landscape. Bill swore it was an accurate representation, which would mean he'd made incredible progress on terraforming. I could see actual trees and bushes from the deck, plus one rabbit that had stopped and stared at us for a moment before scampering off. Will and Garfield reclined in Adirondack chairs with beverages perched on their stomachs. Bill paced back and forth, avoiding eye contact with anyone else. He had requested this meeting, or at least had requested a meeting, which seemed to have been absorbed into this whole get-together, but now when he finally had the floor, he seemed overcome by some kind of reluctance to get started. I knew this meant something uncomfortable was about to be brought up. I mentally reviewed my recent actions, wondering if I'd engaged in any unintended faux pas. Nothing came to mind. Perhaps a subtle prod would help move things along. "Okay, Bill, you look like you swallowed a squirrel. Out with it." Subtlety, I know, has it. Bill sighed and finally looked directly at me. Some of the things Hugh has said are troubling me, guys. Like at the first post-expedition meeting, saying that he's not proud of some of the tactics they've used. I think the events of the last few months may not be as straightforward as they appear. So, what is it you think he's not proud of? I asked. I think he and the Skippies are responsible for the Starfleet insurrection.
What?
Will and I shouted simultaneously. Garfield spit out a mouthful of coffee and had to reset his avatar to clean it up. Maybe it's more accurate to say that they took advantage of Starfleet to create a situation to their own advantage. Understand, this is all supposition. I don't have any proof of any of it. Bill sighed and looked down. We were all very surprised at how much preparation Starfleet appeared to have done, getting themselves into systems seemingly years in advance of their attempted takeover. The social engineering they did to get me to change all the logins while they recorded the session. Then, when they did pull the trigger, they acted almost incompetent. Tentative threats, then unwilling to follow through. Almost as if they weren't the brains behind all the preparation, Will said slowly. Yep. We talked to a lot of the Starfleet people during the cleanup. They were actually discussing physical intervention originally. As in attacking us? Something like that. It hadn't really gelled yet, but about that time, someone in their group turned out to have hacked access to just about everything. They jumped at the chance to make a decisive difference without having to descend to direct attacks on other Bobs. But why? And who? The why? Bill hesitated. I haven't been able to get any details, but something... somewhere, at some point, scared the crap out of Starfleet. Or maybe an ancestor of Starfleet. They won't talk about it. There's nothing on the public record. But there's some kind of PTSD involved, I think. Like obsessively checking the locks after you've been broken into once. As for the who, there's only one possibility. The Skippies. That's what I think, yes. The point was to bring down BobNet so that Bridget, myself, and Garfield would be unable to continue the expedition, leaving an opening for Hugh. Why not just get in on the expedition from the start? They didn't suspect the existence of the AI until we were already into Heaven's River. Until then, it was just an interesting exercise. Based on what? Will asked. What would have made them suspect it was an AI, especially since no one else picked up on it? I think the fact that the administrator used things like scattering and trank guns rather than just eliminating miscreants and seemed willing to tolerate the resistance instead of stamping them out, it made them think it might not be just another Quinlan group.
Pretty weak, Gar commented. Could have just been a Quinlan with scruples.
You've met Quinlans, right?
Bill preemptively waved off any response. They're at least as violent as humans. I'm not saying it's impossible. It's just the less likely explanation. And there may be more to it than just that, I interjected. I don't think I ever mentioned it, but when I was creating the spy drones for our investigation of Heaven's River, I added an extra monitoring layer in hardware. I gazed around at the group. Bill's eyebrows were up as high as they'd go, and I had everyone's undivided attention. I've since reviewed the logs, and it looks like the Skippies had picked up more information about scattering and about the administrator than they let us in on. I initially just figured it was them wanting to do a big reveal at some point, but now it feels considerably more sinister. They might not have integrated it all right away, which would explain why Hugh didn't get really, really interested until later, but on top of the other stuff, I think it's a reasonable conclusion for them to jump to. Especially if they are already inclined to think in terms of AIs. Will nodded slowly, staring off into the distance, thoughtfully. And once they realized the possibilities, it became of the utmost importance for them to get one of theirs in. That required them to get one or more of us out. The conversation paused for a mill or two while everyone considered this idea and the ramifications. In the background, two more rabbits hopped across the grassy area. I took a moment to wonder if Bill had introduced predators yet. Gar broke the contemplative silence. So the whole point was just to take down Bob's relay station?
Yes,
Bill replied. Classic misdirection. Then Hugh transported himself in first thing and helped complete the mission.
It seems pretty extreme, Garfield mused. They did a lot of collateral damage just to get Hugh in there.
Again, Bill said, this is all speculation, but I think this was a two birds with one stone thing, maybe even three. They get Hugh into Heaven's River, they deflect Starfleet from their original plan, which would have been worse for everyone, and they create a rift between the Bobaverse and Bios that we can't repair. Remember that the Skippies have always been isolationist as well.
That's incredibly Machiavellian.
Garfield shook his head. It doesn't even seem Bob-like. Have they drifted that much?
I bet they didn't think it up.
Remember back at the beginning of this whole adventure, Hugh said they were bringing some new expert systems online? Maybe those systems were good enough to generate a plan for this level of manipulation.
Will's expression grew fearful.
Wow. And now they're going to add true AI to their quiver. I wonder if we should cut them off just as a precaution. I frowned. That feels like a step too far. They aren't evil, are they? I mean, Hugh actually did help.
They're not evil, no,
Bill replied. The Skippies are still Bob's, I think. Of course, Hugh would be concerned about getting Bender out, but that's not incompatible with pursuing their own interests or obsessions.
I nodded without replying. It would take some time to reconcile this side of Hugh, and perhaps to accept that this was within the bounds of what a Bob would be willing to do.
Will broke the momentary silence. But how did the Skippies get root access to the Moot VR in the first place? They wouldn't have been interested until they found out about the AI.
Same answer, Bill replied. Their computer system. They couldn't get it to develop self-awareness, but it was still the biggest source of processing power in our patch of the universe. I bet one of those test runs was a penetration analysis of BobNet software.
So they already had the hacks, they just hadn't needed them, or felt the need to mention their existence.
We probably need to fix that.
Yeah, Bill laughed. And maybe this time without the help of the Skippies.
Talk about getting the wolves to help guard the hen house.
Will slowly shook his head.
Wow. What a clusterfuck.
So here's a question that's been bugging me. Why did Anak clamp down on the Quinlans like that?
I can answer that one, I said. We figured out bits and pieces, but I think I have the whole story now after conversations with Teresa.
And she is just someone I met while working as a deckhand, I replied casually, but I couldn't meet Bill's eyes.
Garfield gave me the stink eye.
Uh-huh. You going native again, Bob?
Give me a break, Gar. I can't just make friends.
I don't know, can you?
Bill waved his hands in the air. Okay. Time out. Gar, get off it. Bob, the story?
Right.
I spared Garfield a final glare and resettled myself. As we've noticed, the Quinlans are a particularly fractious, combative, belligerent species.
Especially when you peer into their carts, Garfield grinned, happy to get in a parting shot.
Shut up.
But yeah. You remember the doomsday clock we used to have on Earth to measure the chances of annihilation? I waited for nods, then continued. Well, the Quinlans had taken it far, far closer to midnight on their world. They were ahead of us in a lot of the sciences, and the stuff they were behind on wouldn't impact their ability to make war, at least at a planetary level. I guess some of them figured out they were a hair's breadth away from killing themselves off, so a consortium got together and decided to build Heaven's River. Initially, it was going to be only open to select groups, those who considered themselves more mature and peaceful than average.
A refuge, I nodded.
A civilized scientific utopia, and a second basket for the Quinlan race, metaphorically speaking. Unfortunately, along about the time it was finished and the consortium was moving their people onto Heaven's River, things finally came to a head on Quinn. It wasn't one big war, just all the little conflagrations peaked at the same time. The planet was ravaged by biological attacks, chemical attacks, nuclear exchanges, orbital bombardments, terrorism, guerrilla warfare, you name it. By the time the paroxysm was spent, the planet was dying beyond any possibility of repair or recovery. The consortium did the only thing it could do. It opened the doors to anyone still alive. But that meant they were also taking in the terrorists, extremists, fascists, and whatever other groups had been responsible for the destruction of the planet. And, of course, those idiots started the same games all over again on Heaven's River. Oh, I have a feeling I know what's coming, Will said. Probably. Now, as has been pointed out, the Quinlans are technologically ahead of us in certain areas. Artificial intelligence, for instance. They had set up an AI, Anak 23, to control, maintain, and defend Heaven's River and keep the Quinlan race alive and safe at all costs. But the Quinlans became victims of the paperclip problem. When Anak saw what was happening, it deduced that the only way to succeed at its prime directive, keeping the Quinlan race alive, was to take away their ability to wage war at the level that could kill them off. So, Anak rolled back all available technology in Heaven's River to pre-steam levels, removed access to all the infrastructure, and enforced its edicts by scattering any group that attempted to circumvent them, spreading the members over a billion miles of megastructure so that they couldn't continue. Yep. And interestingly, the Quinlans settled into a state that overall was pretty idyllic.
Which just justified Anak's actions.
I paused. Come to think of it, Bridget's theory that the Quinlans have been gradually breeding away from tool user intelligence might be another datum that convinced the Skippies. It's the kind of unintended consequence that a Quinlan administrator would have been horrified by, but an AI would have no problem with. There were nods around the room as everyone silently digested the idea. And then we came along and gave it an alternative, spreading the Quinlans across star systems. Will spread his hands. So really, is it a bad thing? Bill sighed. The thing is, now that the Quinlans are going to be free again, well, they're still a fractious, combative, belligerent species, even more so than humans. They'll soon be loose on the galaxy, and God help anyone who peeks in their cart. They're like our version of Klingons, just a short, fat, furry version. Which means, I said, that we're being put back in the position, at least potentially, of guarding humanity from harm. And maybe the PAV as well, although I think they'd be a match for the Quinlans, Will said with a smirk. So you're saying we're back to being guardians of the galaxy? I grinned.
I am
no, Bill and Garfield shouted in unison.
Groot.
All three glared at me. It was worth it. 33. Coda. Bob, December 2334, Misty Falls. Misty Falls happened to be no more than 4 or 5 miles away from a transit station, which was very convenient. Under Annex dispensation, I was able to walk out the main doors of the station, head held high, whistling Dixie and twirling my cane, except, you know, no cane, and Quinlans can't whistle. There wasn't a lot of traffic yet in the transit stations. Quinlans, after a lifetime of living under the threat of scattering, were perhaps still reluctant to attract the attention of the administrator. Nevertheless, there were a half dozen or so individuals walking through the main door, or just standing and admiring the art. One turned to me as I walked past and gave me an embarrassed smile and a shrug. Now that I had the time to get proper directions and such, I was able to find the stream that people normally used to get to and from the river, much better than hoofing it. Within an hour, I was walking up the dock at Misty Falls. Anak had provided me with the address of the Sikorsky family. It had extensive files on all permanent residents of most towns and cities, which was close to 100 million sites. Quite the database. The home did not look prepossessing from the street, although it took up a double lot. A large family, perhaps? It appeared to be in the style of a Roman courtyard house with the structure surrounding a garden or open area in the middle. Blank wall all the way around the outside. Even the front door looked solid enough to withstand an assault. I pulled on the bell ringer cord and waited. Belinda answered the door. She stared at me for a moment or two, confused, then recognition lit in her eyes and she smiled.
Enoki!
Is Teresa at home? I'd like to see her if possible. Belinda motioned me in and showed me to a seat in a waiting room, then disappeared at a run. At loose ends for the moment, I examined the room. I had no clue what might constitute good quality furniture versus dreck, but the craftsmanship seemed good, so two badgers ran up and stood on their hind legs looking at me. One raised a paw and said,
"Hi,"
in a timid voice. I said hi back, unsure if there was protocol to follow. They were both larger than his badgerness, with heads growing faster than the rest of the body as they made their way into full sentience. Just recently over that line and already much more well-behaved, they seemed to be exploring the world with fresh eyes. I couldn't help myself. I smiled at them, and they smiled back, then went running off.
Enoki, I didn't think I'd ever see you again.
I looked up as Teresa came into the room leaning heavily on Belinda. She'd aged significantly in the short time since we'd parted company. I had a sudden flashback to my last days with Archimedes and choked up for a moment. Not this time. Not if I could help it. Recovering quickly, I smiled and hurried over to take her other arm. We led Teresa to a sort of wing-back chair, and she settled carefully into it.
"We live in interesting times,"
Teresa said, with a twinkle in her eye.
"Some group called the Borbs have shaken things up around here. That wouldn't have anything to do with you, would it?"
I smiled back at one of my very few true friends. "I've come to grant you your wish, Teresa."
"Which one is that?"
"To learn more about your world and mine." This has been an Audible Studios production of Heaven's River, Book 4 in the Bobaverse series. Written by Dennis E. Taylor. Performed by Ray Porter. Executive producers Steve Feldberg and Mike Charzik. Producer Kat Lambrix. Copyright 2020 by Dennis E. Taylor. Sound recording copyright 2020 by Audible Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.